Local Zero is brought to you by the University of Strathclyde, home of the Strathclyde Institute for Sustainable Communities.
I would like to reframe sustainability not as a problem, which requires a solution, but as a challenge, which presents us with a whole variety of opportunities, but to do it carefully and in a considered and an attentive way to understand how we can maximize benefit for everyone.
To care is to work, is to act. It is not simply an intention to care, but caring is the doing of care.
Hello, welcome to Local Zero with me, Matt Hannan.
And me, Jen Roberts.
So it's a bit of a special episode today. This is the first part of a series showcasing projects supported by the Scottish Research Alliance for Energy, Homes and Livelihoods, or EHL for short.
Now, EHL is a collaborative research alliance which was established in 2023. It brings together scholars from across different disciplines and institutions and also supports connections with practitioners from across industry, government, charities and local communities. Its goal is to make it easier to share the information and expertise necessary to realise a more sustainable net zero Scotland by 2045.
And in this episode, we're focusing on the concept and practice of care and how these relate to the climate crisis. We'll be exploring these ideas with our guests, Dr. Vanneke Arora and Dr. Arno Verhoeven.
Vanneke is a lecturer in heritage at the University of Stirling, and the EHL-sponsored project that she's leading as part of the Alliance is titled Emerging and Sustaining Infrastructures of Care. The project is looking at how individuals, households, communities and organisations come together to care for themselves and for the planet.
And Arno is a senior lecturer in the School of Design at the Edinburgh College of Art. And he is leading an EHL-sponsored project called Retrofit, Collectivisation and Infrastructures of Care.
Before we dive into all of that, then remember you can follow Local Zero on LinkedIn to get all our news and to let us know your thoughts. Just search for Local Zero Podcast.
And wherever you listen, don't forget to subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode. So, Jen, today is all about care. We'll be hearing from Arno and Vanneke, our guests. I know Arno and Vanneke as we met the first time about 18 months ago in the depths of January 2024 at the Cairngorms in central Scotland in the National Park there at a place called Loch Inch, where we had the opportunity to meet a whole bunch of other like-minded researchers interested in sustainability, particularly sustainable households. And there we started to develop some ideas for new projects, which were then subsequently funded through seed funding. And the two projects we'll hear a little bit more about today are from that programme and actually came out of that get-together. And I have to say, as I dipped my toe into the world of care, I started to think about climate in a very different way. But for you, when somebody says the word care, and somebody then utters the words climate change, sustainability and the environment, is there anything particular that pops into your head?
Classic, Matt, about 20 things pop into my head. I mean, the main thing that comes into my mind thinking about care to start with is just paying attention to, caring for means sort of tending to, checking things are all right. You know, I guess expressing a level of emotional kind of interest. But I guess there's two different levels. One is kind of just awareness of, so caring for the environment. Step one of that is being knowledgeable about it, being aware of it. And step two is taking action. And that's the sort of thing that this podcast is all about.
Yeah.
The thing that probably most immediately sprung to my mind actually was thinking about the last couple of episodes that we've been doing around retrofit and adaptation and thinking about caring for buildings in a different way.
Yeah.
And that probably links more into the sorts of projects we're going to talk about today. Is that about right?
Yes. Yeah, I think certainly that there's going to be a healthy dollop of caring for our built environment and crucially the people that reside in it. And I think actually at the heart of this really is language. Because care is a really emotive word. It's also a word that is used in different ways in different contexts. So when I started to research this space, or certainly supporting others to do this, I was thinking, when I think care, I'm thinking healthcare. I'm thinking social care. And I was thinking, well, you know, the relationship and the kind of nexus between these and climate. And that's certainly a research space. You know, the project that you're involved with and I to Just Systems, one of the case studies there is looking at social care in Wales and the climate impacts of that. So the logistics of moving from home to home across, you know, particularly in these rural areas, is massive. But I think also, like, I think the most common context that I use the term care is to my kids. So I'll be saying things like, be careful, or you need to care about this. There's an element of advocacy there. You need to care for this. And I think that comes right back around to activism around the environment, but also increasingly, as we see under pressure, going back to health and social care, activism about our social welfare, caring for others and caring crucially for ourselves.
Yeah.
And as climate change bites, these things will become much more pressured again.
Yeah. And I guess there's one of the things that you and I have kind of knocked around in the past as well, is thinking about why do people care and what really motivates care?
Yeah.
And for some, care is motivated by looking after others. So you care for the environment, you care for the climate because of the impact on people or because of the impact on particular species. But there's also, I find it always really interesting how people think about time and care in terms of, are we talking about the immediate, being careful right now? Or are we talking about caring in terms of a stewardship for future generations? Because ultimately, climate action is a form of care for future, you know, humanities as well as future planet, you know. So there's this really interesting time series of care and what's today, tomorrow, immediate, indirect. And I can imagine it's the kind of thing that once you start researching it or thinking about it too much, it becomes a huge plethora of thoughts.
I guess at the heart of this is, you know, many of the kind of traditional schools around environmental and ecological stewardship is that if we care for environment, by extension, we will be caring for ourselves and others. Yeah. Because at the heart of this, that the natural capital stocks and the ecosystem services that rely on those then provide all of these socioeconomic benefits. And if you don't care for the environment, in effect, you are then neglecting or not caring for these critical services. Yeah. So I think it's about trying to look through these issues through the lens of care.
Yeah.
And asking ourselves, and again, some may say this is sort of very ivory tower, very academic, but often, you know, the power of theory is to look at a problem, but through a different lens and to see it in a different light, to then explore other potential solutions or, crucially, problems that we wouldn't have otherwise seen. And when we come, bring it back to the built environment, which we'll talk a lot about today, I think it's fair to say, Jen, from many of the episodes we've covered on Local Zero, we're not doing a great job about caring for our built environment, particularly the homes that people live in, and the fuel poverty statistics bear that out. And if we look at this as a space for care and a space where care is enacted between families and beyond, maybe we do something differently.
Yeah. Some of the work that we've been doing as part of the Strathclyde Active Mobility Hub is also understanding forms of care in terms of choices around movement. And so you might have somebody choosing to walk or to cycle or to wheel rather than to drive as an act of care, particularly if we're talking about the school run. So you are not driving as an expression of care for the environment, the pollution, the lungs of the children who are going to school. And that might be a much stronger motivator than any of the other messages and messaging that you can get around behavioural change.
Yeah, and again, there's also then the implications this has across the piece. So I guess kind of taking a bit of a systems thinking lens, or at least, you know, in the layman's terms, connecting, you know, actions in one sphere to implications or knock-on effects in another, by doing some of the things you've talked about, that can have direct impacts on some of the more traditional care spaces that we've talked about in terms of healthcare. So if you don't drive your car, you know, maybe you aren't producing the same particulate matter and, you know, nitrous oxide and PM2.5s and all the rest, and you're improving the air quality. And that actually not only has a direct, you know, impact on people's physical and mental well-being, but it also helps healthcare sector.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, absolutely. I find these kind of these caring behaviours that can care for our environment, but then have implications for what we consider to be traditional care spaces, really interesting. So if you take social care.
Care cascade,
wonderful. Yeah, social care, and you take particularly in the, let's say, elderly care, which, you know, care homes, wow, just totally unlocked an entire another space we haven't talked about. But if you've got, say, greener spaces for, you know, people to enjoy who may be infirm or have mobility issues, you know, the co-benefits that fall out of that and the caring consequences are massive. So yeah, I'm really excited about this space. And I think from a policy standpoint, I have been barking on about this for a long time. If we can tie sustainability, climate action to some of these care consequences and make a direct line between those consequences and cost savings, such as the NHS and our healthcare sector, that is where it starts to become a no-brainer, even in the eyes of those who are maybe skeptical.
Yeah. And I guess the final thing maybe to talk about is I find lack of care utterly fascinating as well. I feel like I care so much about so many things that I find the absolute absence of care sort of just leaves you just going, well, what do you do with that? What do you do when people don't care?
Yeah.
You know? And there's an interesting thing there around actually quite often we've been talking about, and certainly from some of the research that I've been involved in, you don't have an absence of care at all. We've got people who care very deeply, very intricately, sometimes very sensitively about different aspects, whether it's water, whether it's climate, air pollution, and so on. So people care, but because of the system in which we live in, the society in which we live in, they're not able to see the changes that they want to see. So, you know, it's not about this phrase of winning hearts and minds because they're already won. It's about actually having systems that allow for that transition. That is one aspect of things. The other aspect is when people just don't care.
Or don't know how to care.
Yeah.
Or maybe can't afford the time and energy to care for whatever reason.
Yeah, they'll have other priorities that take their attention.
Yeah. Does beg bigger questions about how our economy and society is structured and motivations to care. Are we actually putting in place those motivations and incentives to care for one another and to care for others? So with that in mind, and with the sustainability crisis and climate crisis biting, I think we might need to bring in the guests to demystify some of these terms and to bring a little bit of coherence to what we've discussed already.
Let's bring in our experts.
I'm Vanika Arora. I'm lecturer in heritage at the University of Stirling.
I'm Dr. Arno Verhoeven, and I'm a senior lecturer in design at the University of Edinburgh, as well as the director for sustainable development at the Edinburgh College of Art.
Thanks so much for coming along, both of you. I think a really natural place to start would be for you to just tell us a little bit about your EHL-funded projects and kind of how you came to become interested in the subject of care and the environment. So how about I ask that of you first, Vanika, and then hand over to Arno.
Thanks, Jen. So this basically started I received an email from one of my colleagues at Stirling from the EHL asking us to convene at Loch Inch in the Crangoms in the middle of winter. It seemed like an interesting way to learn about environmental issues in Scotland, so I went along. I've been working in the care and more the urban study space in Australia, looking at issues of heat and sustainability. But I was curious to see what the reverse might look like. So I went along to this retreat and met a couple of other ECRs there, early career researchers. We didn't have much in common subject-wise, but all of the issues that were sort of at the forefront of our minds seemed to match. So it was more about how can we get together academically than any real focused agenda. And one of the things that we were really interested in talking about was how academics collaborate with the third sector in this space. So my colleagues, Fran Vaghi, Carolina Roca, Manas Murthy, each of them has been looking at sustainability from their respective fields, but in very different ways. But we were more interested in how academics and the third sector collaborate or not.
And Vanika, maybe if I may just press on that, what perspective were your other colleagues coming from? Are you talking about different sort of sectors or systems?
So different systems and disciplines. So I am a trained architect, but I work in heritage. Fran is an anthropologist. Carolina is a psychologist and Manas is an urban designer. Each of us has very different ideas of what sustainability needs from us and what climate change or climate action might look like or what needs to be the focus. But equally, in terms of the fact that people need to be at the center of this conversation, particularly marginalized people, the people who haven't caused the crisis, and that the responsibility of addressing climate crisis needs to be, the conversation needs to be pivoted from a, you must all individually do this, to how can we do this in our different locations. So this was the starting point of how we all had similar leanings, but very different disciplinary ideas of what these leanings meant.
Perfect. Thank you.
I arrived at Loch Inch simply out of curiosity. I knew a couple of people who were attending. It was a nice January opportunity to go out and see some people related to the role that I had just undertaken as Director for Sustainable Development. But I'd been working in, I suppose, an allied sector for a number of years, particularly energy and development. And I've become very interested in perceptions of energy and stories about energy, particularly that gap between whether we need a centralized system like the grid, and it needs to be overhauled and made contemporary for the electrical transition. It needs to be decarbonized. But in contrast to that is the individual nature of how people can adopt what I suppose I would refer to as a gung-ho attitude of buying solar panels and buying batteries and wiring up their house and to some extent going off grid. So there's a tension between the autonomy of doing it for yourself and the space of working collectively. And before I came to the SRA, the EHL group at their first get together, I had already been working with a number of colleagues who were engaged with collective notions of retrofit with the perspective that retrofit is going to be easier if we could do it together. Both from a financial perspective, from a skills perspective, from an environmental perspective. But collectivization was something that seemed to be very, very difficult. And the way that the council, at least in Edinburgh, had set up was responsibilities were falling towards individuals or collectives, but it was primarily people who were volunteers who were leading these kinds of initiatives to try and drum up support and build community engagement from the ground up. But that puts an awful lot of emphasis and stress on people to kind of pull together. I think the other notion that we talk about energy, primarily we talk about energy generation, but we don't talk about energy conservation. We don't talk about reduction in energy demand as much as I think we could. We could be more conscious about that. And I think coming together at Loch Inch, there was a number of ideas around if we could fix the buildings so that they were, or that we lived in or we worked in, that were so that they were more energy efficient and we could use less energy, we wouldn't have so much of a requirement for the demand of energy that we currently face. So there seemed to be a space here, but the core question for me is, how do we get a nation to do this together? And so coming to Loch Inch, it was really wonderful to meet people like Matt and Kate Carter, who I already know here at Edinburgh, and a whole pile of others that are engaging in these kinds of questions also.
So I think this is a good point for us to start to map out and unpick what we mean by care, what we mean by infrastructures of care. I think you've both set the scene about how we've arrived at this point. Arne, you've already raised some really interesting questions about sort of autonomy versus collective action. But just if we begin at the very beginning, what do we mean by care? What do we mean by infrastructures of care? And I'm particularly interested because I think most of our listeners will be coming to this from the perspective of knowing different care sectors, particularly healthcare, also social care, and care in many different contexts. Jed and I spent quite a lot of time before you guys came in talking about our own perceptions of this. But yeah, maybe if we can begin with Vanika here, how do you see and understand care?
The theoretical ideas of care definitely comes from social care and healthcare work that's been done quite a few decades ago. But for us, we started with the more feminist theory, more science and technology studies ideas of care, where it's basically the broader network or the practices that help sustain everyday life and everyday well-being. And the peculiar thing about care is that it goes beyond the formal or the institutional. So it goes beyond the more rigid infrastructures of policy, of just literally housing, critical infrastructures like that. What we were particularly interested in is thinking about care practices as invisible forms of labor, and the idea that care can foreground the fact that to care is to work, is to act. It is not simply an intention to care, but caring is the doing of care. And I think that is
a practice. Care is a practice, yeah.
Care is a practice. It's a verb. It is not a well-meaning or a well-intentioned idea. It is only in the doing of care are you practicing it.
Mm.
And I think that's something to hold on to as we move in the sustainability and climate action spaces. It's not enough to just have the intention to act, but it is the action that is caring.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You might care about something, but it's about putting that hypothetical or latent care into practice.
Into practice, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm. And in terms of infrastructures, to me, the metaphor of infrastructures is as important as the theoretical ideas that go behind critical infrastructure theory, which is to really think about infrastructures as networks that allow things to come to be. And infrastructures, much like care, when they work well, they're invisible. So if your electrical grid is working, if your transport network is working, you do not notice it. You're only paying attention. Yeah.
I mean, Jen and I have gone through weeks of me having bad broadband. So yeah, this is still very raw, yeah. Vanika, for me. Yeah.
It is only when those infrastructures are frayed or when they're not working that we begin to pay attention to them. So in that sense, both care and infrastructures are background things that happen, and they take a lot of work to sustain. But this work is often underappreciated, overworked. So people who care and the infrastructures of care that need to happen for climate action or for sustainability happen at max capacity, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Okay, so this kind of infrastructures ecosystem that sort of enables care. Arno, do you recognize those definitions? Anything different to add for your project or our project, I should say? Where are you / we coming from on this?
I think when our group came together, the notion that care came about was a bit of a revelation. I think it was an addition through some other conversations that we'd had. And it seemed like an interesting point of departure where none of us had really thought about care in the context of collectivization, community, retrofit, which is often seen as a constructivist or, you know, as a problem-solving space. Retrofit is trying to fix something that's broken. Where care was something, as we started to read more deeply, and all the things that Vanika said really resonate with a lot of the work that we'd been reading about the social sciences and the moral implications of and the political actions associated with care and care theory. The idea that, first off, you should be able to pay attention. You should notice that something is going on. And Vanika mentioned, you know, when the infrastructure is broken, that's when you notice it. And as a designer, I'm often asked, oh, so you make pretty pictures or you style things. And it's actually, no, I do different stuff. I reconfigure things. I move stuff around to see how things might work better. And for me, that space of the system is a place to reconfigure. So whether it's a system that involves, you know, retrofit or energy or social care, it's moving things around to see how else it could be done. But the first step is to pay attention, is to watch it, to see what's going on, to immerse yourself in it. But that requires you to start to have attentiveness, to be aware, to look, to see. And there's a tension, or I suppose there's a space to act. So. To some extent, I totally agree with what Vanika said, but I would add that space that you can act and not care, which is, I think, things we want to avoid, people who just act mindlessly, but then you can care and not act. So you can feel that you have a resonance or you can have something that you're passionate about, but yet not necessarily, you know, pick up the tools and actually start to do something. So some of the theories around care are the notion that we can care about something, but we also should probably care for something, which brings in the action. But that also then starts to unpick the notion that caring for something or someone outlines a kind of a transaction or a relationship, so that caring for someone involves someone having to receive that care. And that is a particular kind of, I suppose, an attitude or an approach. So how is our care received? as we are in the process of giving care for or to others. So it's become a real interesting space to look at retrofit in the sense of, to some extent, it's caring for the building, it's caring about the environment, but it's also caring with the building, caring with the community, through the community, for the community. It puts retrofit in a much bigger context that actually we are in this together, and we have to pay attention to where we need to put our effort and our energy to make things better.
This has just sparked so many thoughts and ideas, just hearing the both of you talk through some of that. And actually, one of them being around, you talked just then about the giving of care and then the kind of receiving of care. And actually, when I've been thinking about care in regards to the environment, I've not thought about it in quite that way. But actually, the flip of that is to take environmental care, so to do things that care for the environment, is actually the opposite of that, in that it's like doing less harm, you know, because the receiving from the environmental perspective, it's not receiving care, it's but receiving less harm from our activities. So it's really fascinating. And the other thing that kind of cropped up, we have had a couple of conversations recently on the pod around water and water provision and caring for water. And just both of you talked about the kind of invisible infrastructures. And one of the things that we often hear people say is that people don't care about water because it's in kind of invisible service. It works how it's meant to. You turn on the tap, you get water for free, and it's clean. Now, we know that that's not always the case, and it's very disruptive, just like those other infrastructures that you talked about. But with water, what we know from our research, from my research, is that people do care deeply about water, even though it is invisible. And I guess I wanted to ask you about that as well, to say, well, do you find, can people care about the invisible? You know, it's not just about taking stuff for granted in terms of electricity or the ability to be warm. What are your views or thoughts on caring for the invisible or making the invisible visible or tangible in some way?
I think the idea that water is invisible is interesting because water isn't just an infrastructure. It is the fundamental affective experience to be wet, to quench thirst. And water also, it doesn't work quite the same way as perhaps electricity. So it's also about what do we feel affectively related to. So in the case of buildings, for example, the domestic home, you might not care for buildings in general, but most people, not all, but most people do care about the domestic or the home or the household or the container within which we live our entire life. And that causes us to act. Like the same way we don't think about water as infrastructure, but the home is also obviously infrastructure as well. And when it starts to break apart, it really begins to influence our lives. Or when it is cold, or when the ideas of comfort are no longer present for us. But it goes beyond that. There is a responsibility to look after things like water or the home, which comes from, oh, these are the infrastructures I need to keep going. But equally, there is an affect of, I love where I live, or this is where I belong, this is part of my identity, or this is the relationship I have with water because it connects me to nature. And that is why I must care. So I think in each of these cases, the relation goes beyond extractive. And that is what needs more highlighting, more foregrounding in order for care practices and care networks to thrive.
Mm. I totally agree. I think what you said there, Vanika, that I want to pick up on is you spoke about identity. And I think it goes back, Jen, to what you're speaking about. Can we care for the invisible? My identity, I would argue, is very difficult to, it's very difficult to concretize. My culture, my community, what is it that holds these things together? My household, even so there's the walls that support the roof under which I live with my family, and we have a rhythm, we have objectives, and we have patterns, and we have myths, and we celebrate memories. All of these things are, I think, people are really trying to care for. So there's a set of relations that we build. And I think when care starts to slip, it's when the relations become too distant from our immediate proximity. So I will care immediately about water when it doesn't come out at the right pressure from the shower. I will care immediately if it comes out of the tap and it's brown and I can't drink it. I will care for it when there's a drought or a flood. It's when those things are not evident that I tend to slip. But looking deeper, there comes a point when I start to see water for not just as an object that's useful for extraction because I require it for drinking or washing, but actually it's a thing that sustains a whole kind of system of life. There's microbes in it. There's bacteria in it. It requires us to do that first step of care, which is to pay attention.
So in that context, Arno, what does this care lens offer us in that battle to tackle these various environmental and ecological crises, the climate crisis? What does this perspective offer us in terms of achieving sustainable development? I mean, there's various things you've said there about that relationship, also, Vanika, about the infrastructures of care, enabling care. Why is this valuable?
I think it's incredibly valuable because it's a different kind of frame. It's a way of framing our relationship to each other, to the world, to the environment. Framing is, I think, an important concept, and it has a long lineage in psychology, in cognitive science, but also in sociology. There's an interesting take within design research where the aspect of design is often considered to be reframing. So it's understanding how we see the world, and then we kind of shift something in it to see it in a different way. I think care, coming to understand that frame or that lens of care through which we see the world, allows us to see the world in a different way. And so there's an inquisitiveness, there's a curiosity, and there's a gentleness, I think, to say, well, care asks me, it affords me to say, I need to pay attention. So I really have to watch what's going on. I have to really listen to what's going on around me. I think it's a very sensorial thing. I have to be aware of what it feels like when it touches me. You know, a hug is a very caring gesture, but it's not just the act of doing it. Some people are very good at hugging and some people are very bad at it. But that's because, you know, it's not a skill. It's an attenuation to what's going on around you. I think that space and that way of reframing this, rather than retrofit being a technical problem, I think it's a social problem. It's the fact that we care in very different ways. So the Scottish government cares about meeting very, you know, stringent and aggressive carbon and climate targets. But I'm not sure that I'm going to go over to the Scottish Parliament down at Holyrood and I'm going to find a politician that's willing to give me a hug because I'm struggling with climate anxiety because I just don't know how to do it. If there are any politicians who want to come and offer free hugs for those who are climate anxious, I'm happy to broker that and set up some kind of event for that.
Yeah, and again, or what a caring home or home environment looks and feels like. So Vanika, the same question to you. I think, what does a care lens or caring lens offer us in terms of that sustainability push?
I think picking off where Arno left, which is, it's definitely decenters the technical and begins to center the social. And I think that is that's the crucial thing that we need to acknowledge, that climate action needs to be social. It needs to be socially embedded. It needs to be culturally responsive. And it needs to acknowledge the tensions that not all humans are using energy in the same way. Not all humans understand energy in the same way. And that not all humans have the capacity or the agency to do climate action in the same way. And I think a care lens can foreground the tensions that taking climate action might involve. Because it's all very well to say that we must all care for this planet. But what does that mean? What does that mean if I can't pay my heating bill? So to me, it's a pivoting of the conversation. So like Arno saying, the net zero targets, they're abstract ideals. If I'm living in a house which has mold every winter, which is too cold, but my energy bill is a real target. It is also about flipping the conversation to people where they're not thinking purely in this global target, which is so far removed from the lived reality of everyday life. And I think if we begin to think about this, and I think scale is a critical part of the care dialogue, which is to think about things where they are. Think in place, think local, think incremental. it's not saying let's not talk about the bigger responsibilities of larger corporations and all of that, but it's really, you can't have the same conversation at a household level that you're having at a government level. And to me, a CARE lens looks at a difference in scale and can offer a granularity of action, which yeah. other frames are often missing.
Yeah, can I just pick up on the question of scale there? What I'd really like to get a better sort of handle on, for me anyway, is who are we talking about caring here? Are we talking about us, you and me? Like, are we talking about something bigger than that? What scale of caring are we talking about? What sort of actors are we talking about? And maybe the best way to actually ask that question is to ask, well, how do we care currently? What examples can you give of care in that sense?
Who should care? Yeah. Mm, who's responsible for care?
Those tensions that Vanika just started talking about. So yeah, can you give a couple of examples of that scale or how care is currently enacted?
So just in our small seed grant project, we started with the WHO was academics and community organizations working in the space. And let's say we start there as one scale, where it begins from organizations that are working in cities like we had Transition Dundee, we had Transition Stirling, we had Stirling City Heritage Trust. So we are talking about organizations with 6 to 10 people, annual budgets, which are always precarious. And you have academics, a bunch of whom were ECRs. And in this network of people who are all talking about similar things and similar goals, the university should care. The national government should care about funding. But equally, how do we care for each other? So how do we make an infrastructure of care in which we share the load or the burden or share the invisible labor of caring for the same cause? And it started with simply figuring out how do we make research projects less extractive. It's a small but seemingly complicated thing, because a year later, I'm working with a couple of the other organizations. Three of our ECRs have gone on to different roles, so they've shifted gears entirely. Two of the organizations no longer exist. So we're talking about really fraught scenarios where people are overworked, they are pushed beyond their elastic limits. So how do we then create an infrastructure which takes into account burnout or takes into account the fact that despite wanting to care for a larger global environmental crisis, each agency or each agent in this network has their own micro crisis to deal with? And to me, this example just brought to fore that unless we create redundancies and unless we create a network that supports each of the nodes or each of the people in this network, it falls apart. And that's what happens to a lot of community organizations. So this is just one example of the scale of which I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I would imagine this would work at different scales.
Yeah, sure. I mean, this you speaking there also makes me start thinking about self-care, this huge industry that's, you know, but actually a very care and externally care-focused approach is entirely exhausting and can lead to burnout. So that also brings in the concept of self-care in that system of care. And back, I guess, down to research culture as well. But Arno, over to you. When we're talking about scale here, how do we currently care?
It's a tough question. The example I think that comes directly to mind has to do with, following on from what Vanek was talking about, with organizations that existed 2 years ago who had a remit or a mandate, like a transition, name your city or region. They're funded by a government, whether that's the Scottish government or our local council, to enact this, to, you know, create some kind of ground movement. And I think this is even baked into Scottish government guidance, that voluntary sectors are defined, volunteers are defined in a very particular way. But to rely on people to do community work, to do grounded work, to rely on volunteers forgets the fact that the majority of volunteers still have jobs because they have to do the other things that they have to take care for in their lives. They have to pay the bills. They have to put food on the table. They have to build, you know, an equitable trust. They need to be gainfully employed. So we're, to some extent, we're asking people to do more with less. Now, that comes back to the who is the we that's asking. Is it, you know, we're asking early career researchers to do a lot of extra work, extra free time with precarious employment? I hope that's quite a well-understood phenomenon at this point, even though we're not able to fully address it. I think in terms of scale, there are sustainability is such a complex problem. And it isn't just about the material environment. It's also about the social good. It's also about, you know, making sure that there is prosperity for the planet, prosperity for the people, and prosperity for people of the future, that we're actually leaving enough of the planet so that others in future generations can also continue to prosper. It requires us to care, but it also requires us to be, I think, very strategic and very direct. Say, it's not a whole thing that I'm caring about. There are things where there will be trade-offs. And care, I think, is the attentiveness of understanding the consequences of the choices I have to make, but doing it at least in a careful manner, rather than simply saying, it has to be done at all cost. Somebody's not going to be able to meet that cost. There will always be people that are outside of those definitions, those boundaries. So for me, the scale part is the difficult part, and it requires self-care because we have to know our own limits and our own boundaries, because we will have to continue to work in the absence of, you know, some widespread solution that we can click our fingers and suddenly the problem solved and we can carry on. I think part of the framing is, and this might be the contentious part that I leave with you, is I would like to reframe sustainability not as a problem which requires a solution, but as a challenge which presents us with a whole variety of opportunities, but to do it carefully and in a considered and an attentive way to understand how we can maximize benefit for everyone.
That's a good point. So let's dig into that and then look to wrap up. We've got a big, hairy problem in terms of various different crises, not just environmental, but economic and social. One of the, I think, bugbears that many people have, particularly when you hear discussions around climate delay or delay of climate action, is that this caring responsibility is shifted from let's just in the round, the state, multinationals, da da da, onto the individual. So go back to water. It's on you to conserve water. Now, I don't deny that, right? That's important, but it's a part of the problem. It's also about the water distribution companies. It's also about ensuring that we are sourcing water sustainably. It's also about building our homes and our streets in a way that captures that water and reprocesses that water. So I would hazard that a part of the problem, or part of the problem in terms of not solving the problem, is that we're putting that caring responsibility too much on the individual. So with that in mind, you may or may not agree with that, and I'd love to hear from you on that, but what do we do about that? And how do we transition into a more caring space to tackle these problems? Vanika, anything in there that you want to come back on?
No, absolutely. It is impossible to talk about optimism and talk about collective action when every collective action is also simultaneously resisting against institutional frameworks. So I absolutely agree with you that the idea that the responsibility to care is often seen as individual or at a micro scale. And I think that's why we should circle back to the idea of scale. So while I was talking about the example, in order to make these infrastructures of care thrive, institutionally, there needs to be a more acknowledgement of the labor that goes into climate action. So when you're asking someone to be responsible for their water usage, or when you're asking someone to not take a car, then you need to think about the literal infrastructure to make that possible. And that needs to be reflected in institutional policy, governance. So that kind of institutional infrastructure that needs for care infrastructure to thrive has to happen simultaneously. And it can't simply be, oh, you community organizations are doing such great work, here's another tiny pot of money so that you can carry on for 3 more years and keep going. We support you and we encourage you. Here's a small award, which means nothing, but it needs to be in terms of big action. So my argument would be that the bigger the scale, the greater the responsibility to act. The responsibility to care is then that much more exponential. So if you're talking about scale, while I do think we need to work on both ends of it, where in the meantime, we can't just expect people to give up and be like, okay, these big corporations that are polluting are never going to stop. This big crisis is never going to end. But rather, how do we make do, or how do we, in Michael Courtois' words, of how do we have tactics to get along right now while we try and solve the bigger problems which need a larger timescale?
And these institutional infrastructures are hard if you've kind of lost that culture of caring or that tradition of care, which may have been eroded, So that's really, really important. Arno, anything to come back on around that?
I outlined that part of my job as a designer is to reconfigure things, but I think the fun part is to actually, make a mess, to really take things apart. And to that extent, what I'm going to say might sound, I don't know if it'll be controversial or if it'll be provocative, but I think we have an opportunity to fundamentally rewrite our relationship to things, which will be difficult because I understand that there are trade-offs. There are corporations that our government needs to keep in this country because they create gainful employment for communities, but they do so often at the expense of the environment in which they're working. I would argue that, like with things like water, energy, soil, land, food, we could take a fundamentally different approach by looking at things more in a commons perspective, where we would be saying that actually we are one people, we are one group, and we need to be caretakers for this collectively, and that we need to find ways to be radically challenging the way that the individual system of capitalism encourages us, or actually almost I think streams us or hems us into these destructive patterns. I think it's going to take a very strong society to stand up and say, we want to do something fundamentally different. But one of the things that I love about Scotland in particular is that you do see a lot of things happening. The island of Egg, one particular example in terms of their relationship to energy and how they manage their energy system. Community wealth generation that's taking place. The Scottish government, I think, is in many cases at the forefront of these kinds of commoning approaches, community practice, empowerment of communities. And it's not to say that I don't think they're doing it. I would just like to see it accelerated to a point where we could do much, much more of this so that we could afford the space of saying, my relationship to the world is intimately tied to my relationship to others, and that actually having a caring approach to things, whether that's people, food, energy, air, fish in the sea, name your sustainable development goal, was something that was just baked into our DNA.
I'm really itching just having heard those kind of almost provocations there is just to kind of to ask then, if our approach to climate and sustainability today is not caring enough, I'm hearing from you, it's not caring enough. There are caring people, there are caring infrastructures, but it's not enough. What needs to be done different? Like, how must care change into the future?
I think it's one approach. I know that systems thinking is a very popular concept, displacing the so yesterday design thinking. But I think that, we're on the advent of a systems of systems thinking, or a meta systems thinking, where we understand a system, but then we have to understand the relationships of systems to each other. So understanding the environment might start with reframing our modes of education. Which may mean less focus on writing and mathematics and facts of history, but actually getting kids out into the world where they can get their hands dirty, where they can understand the difference between worms and water, where the rain comes from, when it doesn't come, why is it not coming? Give them courses in meteorology when they're 5 years old. Everything that stands around us has been constructed. It is a social norm that we've developed. Our relationship to nature is to some extent also a social norm in the way that we bound things and say, this is a park, this is nature, this is a city, this is not, this is, we can rewrite all of those things with courage and conviction. But I think it requires a collective of people, a common, if you will, to say that this is not yours and mine, this is ours, and that actually I understand where I end and you begin. And it's not just a hard line or a distinction. It's a fluid space where sometimes it has to move so that we can help each other.
I'd just like to riff off what Arno said exactly about commoning, but equally about sectors. A lot of climate action and sustainability action takes place in, I'm in circular economy, I will do circular economy. I am in building retrofit, I'll do this. And governance works the same way. It works in these silos, but actually they are part of the same problem. And if you're thinking about networks, not only are we talking about networks of people, but I would argue networks of sectors to really, again, if you're talking about resources that are always scanty, then a sharing of resources cross-sectorally might be one way to address some of the institutional problems. Not all. This is not a magic solution, but it's a kind of a plaster on a gaping wound where, fine, we have limited resources. Let's work together to see how easily one can connect circular economy, community gardening, and building retrofit, because all three can actually be interconnected if you just have someone clever enough.
I think we have lots of people who are clever enough.
Just got to get them together in the same room, it sounds.
And talking.
And funding.
Maybe this is the podcast that does it, Matt. Suddenly everybody's around the old, you know, the speaker listening to.
That's what we're hoping for. So I think, Arno, Vanika, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much. This has been a very illuminating discussion, and I now have care on the brain, I think. And we'll have you back again soon to learn a little bit more about your whole research agenda on this space. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Really nice to be here.
So, Jed, another fascinating discussion. Lots to chew over. Any key takeaways for you from that?
Yeah. Where to start, Matt? I think one of the things that I took away, there's two things. One thing to me is how similar this care framing and care perspective is to our mission at CISC, the Strathclyde Institute for Sustainable Communities, in terms of unlocking that grassroots action and enabling that action of care. If we talk about people having that will, that care, but not being able to deliver what they want to with that energy, then really that's what we're all about, right, at CISC. Yes. So that really stuck out to me. And I think the other thing that stuck out, and I have a suspicion it will be also playing on your mind, Matt, is about what kind of framing of carelessness.
Yeah.
So I think we've explored in previous episodes and today that people do care in different ways. And I think that unearthing that care is a really important part of climate action and much broader transition. But actually, on the flip side of that, what does it mean to not care? And actually, is there a framing of carelessness? Is there a recognition that certain actions, behaviours, responsibilities, feelings and thoughts are actually an act of carelessness? And the care cascade that we spoke about at the beginning and what that then leads to. So those are the things that really stuck out to me. How about yourself?
Well, yeah, I think maybe two things. The first is the importance of language and the power of language in terms of encouraging us to think differently about the same problem. So I think it's not just about taking a care lens on this, but it's almost playing with the language that makes you think about it in different ways. So there you talked about carelessness, and then I was thinking to myself, well, is recklessness the same? And I'm not sure it is. I think like recklessness suggests some kind of active wanton kind of destruction of the environment. Like you actually almost gunning for that, whereas the carelessness is almost, you know, this sense of neglect. So I think there's the power of language in this. And I think the second is about traditions of caring and cultures of caring. There was something I was listening to the other day, another podcast called The Origin Story, and they were looking at the deep diving into GDP. And, you know, they were talking about where some countries have gone full out for growth versus other countries like Japan, for instance, which have maybe gone down more of a sort of steady state economy, haven't maybe pushed as strongly at that because there are, and this is their view, not necessarily mine, but there are stronger cultures around caring or taking a more careful approach to the economy. Mm. And this makes me kind of think, well, if you look at the British culture as an example, can we still remember how to care for one another? Can we still remember how to care for the environment? And if not, how do we relearn that? And how do we then pass that on to future generations or amongst our community? So yeah, I'm very taken with that. Cultures of care, traditions of care. And if we've lost that, then I'm really very concerned about that. Mm. But we must relearn how to do that. And we must look to where it is that is present and very much alive. So lots to take away from this. So really, really, really interesting chat.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening to this episode of Local Zero. If you enjoyed the podcast, please help us bring it to more people. Hit the share button and tell a friend or a colleague about this episode.
Yes, and if you're listening on Spotify, you can leave your feedback directly on the episode. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a review. 5 stars, as always, please.
Of course. And if there's a subject or a project that you think we should be covering on Local Zero, we really want to hear about it. So please do drop us an email at localzeropod@gmail.com or send us a message on LinkedIn. Just search for Local Zero Podcast.
And also, if the pod has inspired you to do things differently, whether that's at home or at work or somewhere in between, please do let us know. Email us at localzeropod@gmail.com. We're always keen to hear. But until then, see you next time.
See you next time.
Produced by Bespoken Media.